Chapter 9. The Dimensional Character. A Unity of Opposites. To review, a role's characterization conceals her true character, and together they float atop her subconscious, that ocean of drives and desires, unthinking habits, and sea tides of temperament. These three aspects, outer, inner, hidden, gather to complete a character. But what keeps them from flying apart? What pulls surface personae, inner selves, and subconscious drives together into one unified character? Answer: the power of contradiction. In the 5th century BCE, the philosopher Heraclitus argued that reality holds itself together through a system of contradictions. Quote, cold things warm up, the hot cool off, wet becomes dry, dry becomes wet, unquote. Hot cold merge to create temperature. Dry wet unite into humidity. Birth death forged life. Thus runs the dynamic of all physical existence, creating a unity of opposites. This principle applies to humankind as well. The moment a person is born, she begins to die. At every point in her life, she is evolved, yet evolving, dreaming while awake, awake while dreaming. No matter her age, she's both young and old, younger than anyone older, older than anyone younger. No matter her sexual orientation, she's both female and male. Within the harmony of every well-designed role, a set of living contradictions intersect. The unity of opposites, therefore, is the founding principle of character complexity. Stories populated by complex characters preserve, in an aesthetically purified form, the essential contradictions that unite ugliness with beauty, tyranny with freedom, good with evil, truth with lie, and the like. Character dimension. Human nature's emotional instrument was strung in a violent past, hundreds of thousands of years before Socrates, Buddha, or Jesus could retune it. Virtues such as honesty, generosity, and courage constantly revert to treachery, selfishness, and cowardice in the same society, the same person. As a result, paradox rules humanity. People love their families, yet hate their families. Save time, yet waste time. Seek the truth, yet deny the obvious. Prize nature, yet pollute nature. Hunger for peace, yet rush to war. Complex characters first display a specific self, then change into its opposite, and then back again. These dynamics have a pattern. They swing back and forth from pole to pole, depending on the relationships a character has with other characters and within herself. Some positive, some negative. The in-vogue client of a professional dominant is a high-powered but highly stressed executive who disdains those she subordinates and deifies those who subordinate her. To balance the pleasures of power with the pangs of humiliation, she submits to the whip. Psychologists coined sadomasochist as a perfect oxymoron to name this contradiction in a Dior suit. When a character's inner and outer natures fuse into a single function, the role congeals into a type. Nurse, comp, teacher, superhero, villain, sidekick, and the like. But when contradictions underpin a role, they activate a more complete, complex, and fascinating character. These oppositions form dimensions. Dimensional characters arouse our curiosity by making us wonder how two sides of a contradiction can live within one person. That, in turn, makes them unpredictable and all the more fascinating. From moment to moment, who knows which side will show up? Complexity in six dimensions. Dimensions span between aspects of a role's outer characterization, between various inner selves, and between facets of the hidden self. What's more, these three levels often contradict one another. As a result, a complex character may contain six distinct kinds of dimensions. 1. A contradiction between two aspects of characterization. Picture a woman who spends an hour each morning getting her makeup just right, but doesn't bother to brush her teeth. Suppose this woman abuses her partner but coddles her children, kisses up to her boss but tyrannizes her staff. These three dimensions fuse qualities of characterization, her physical, personal, and social selves, into intriguing behaviors, giving the reader audience insight into what's important and unimportant to her. At the level of characterization, characters are often aware of their traits, although they rarely perceive them as contradictory. Instead, they rationalize them as necessary. These behaviors are also visible to the rest of the cast, who think whatever they choose to think about them. 2. A contradiction between characterization and true character. Envision an elderly woman dozing in a wheelchair. As she awakes, she gazes at the men in her retirement home, and suddenly, a glint flashes in her eye, lit by her ever-young dream of romantic love. 3. A contradiction between characterization and subconscious desire. Imagine a hyperactive woman who never stops doing things, and yet her hidden self always remains deeply calm. This serene self comes out only when she faces danger. Under threat, she goes still, strong, and focused. To discover a character's subconscious, the key, once again, is contradiction. When a character says one thing and does another, what are the possibilities? 1. She's lying. She knows what she really wants, but outwardly pretends to want the opposite. Or 2. She's honest. She really believes what she says, really wants what she wants, but when she tries to get it, something undercuts her efforts. She doesn't know why, but every once in a while, she turns a rather dark face to the world. A contradictory force lives in her subconscious. 4. A contradiction between two conscious desires. The adulterer's dilemma. A woman caught between devotion to her husband and passion for her lover. At the level of true character, a conscious, self-aware mind analyzes her inner contradiction, worries about it, and struggles to make a choice. If she talks about her dilemma with others, it becomes an aspect of characterization. If she keeps a subtextual conflict to herself, the reader audience can perceive it only by implication. Once she makes a choice of action, however, the reader audience reads her mind clearly and senses her inner dimension. To symbolize dimensions between two conscious desires, playwrights such as Samuel Beckett in Waiting for Godot, Jean Genet in The Maids, and Suzanne Laurie Parks in Top Dog, Underdog, resort to splitting the mind into two and symbolizing an inner contradiction as a pair of bickering characters. 5. A contradiction between a conscious desire and a subconscious desire. The lover's dilemma. Fervent passion for a fiancé versus fear of commitment. To symbolize dimensions of this fifth type, novels such as Robert Louis Stevenson's The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and two novels entitled The Double, one by Fyodor Dostoevsky and the other by José Saramago, cast conscious and subconscious contradiction as a duet of characters with contradictory drives, one toward good, the other toward evil, that mirror each other. In Breaking Bad, showrunner Vince Gilligan gives his protagonist, Walter White, a secret second self known as Heisenberg. This doppelganger comes vividly to the surface in Season 5, Episode 14. Jack, leader of a Nazi biker gang, has Walter's brother-in-law, Hank, at his mercy. As Jack raises his gun, Walter pleads for Hank's life. While he's begging, he's Walter, a man capable of conscious caring. But immediately after Nazi Jack murders Hank, Walt betrays Jesse, his dearest friend and partner. In that act, Heisenberg, the manifestation of Walter's savage subconscious, takes charge. 6. A contradiction between two subconscious motivations. The family dilemma. The need to sacrifice your desires for the people you love versus the need to sacrifice other people to fulfill your personal ambitions. Subconscious dimensions live below the level of awareness, unthought, and unexpressed. Once again, the reader audience can perceive an inner contradiction only through the character's choices of action under pressure. Children, for example, often harbor contradictory subconscious attitudes toward their parents. Fear and awe, love and hate. In the tragedy of Hamlet, Shakespeare projected a son's contradictory feelings onto two characters, the noble father versus the dastardly uncle. The Lion King, which was Hamlet with a happy ending, repeated this duality on stage and on screen. The fairy godmother versus the wicked stepmother in Cinderella does the same for daughters. In Persona, Ingmar Bergman expressed the split soul by merging a nurse and patient into one woman, then separating them back into two, then one again, two again. In Black Swan, Nina Sayers, Natalie Portman, a ballet dancer rehearsing Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake, suffers a conflict between split selves. Because the ballet calls for the same dancer to perform two opposed protagonists, White Swan and Black Swan, the film uses this setup to dramatize her dual self. The White Swan role calls for symmetry, grace, cool anti-sexuality, and above all, precise skills that define Nina's longing for poised perfection. The Black Swan demands the opposite talents: creativity, spontaneity, sexual abandon, powerful animalistic energies alive within Nina that she fiercely suppresses. The war between her uptight White Swan and her voluptuous but stifled Black Swan surfaces in paranoid hallucinations. At climax, Nina's two selves finally join forces in a glorious, life-fulfilling performance, then consume each other as she dies, whispering, "It was perfect." For a real-life example of the unity of opposites, consider the novelist, playwright, screenwriter, and multidimensional celebrity Graham Greene. Greene was self-hating versus self-glorifying, meticulously disciplined versus self-destructive, deliriously romantic versus bitterly cynical, devout Catholic versus lifelong adulterer, Nobel Prize-nominated novelist versus pulp hack, strict theologian versus moral relativist, salon communist versus closet monarchist, anti-imperialist crusader versus post-colonial parasite, civilized to a fault versus drugged to distraction. Greene was an exceptional artist, but no exception to human nature. To unify characters over time, dimensions must be consistent. If a man rescues a kitten up a tree once, that's not a dimension. It's a gratuitous kindness to gain cheap sympathy from the reader audience. If a woman rescues cats throughout a story, but then suddenly kicks a dog, that's not a dimension either. That's a snit. Dimensions must be variable. A character who loves cats but hates dogs and so rescues kittens but abandons puppies wages war within herself. A reader audience would be amused and curious to discover the roots of this neurotic contradiction, so long as the pattern doesn't become repetitious. A dimension needs a certain unpredictability and progression, not the same cat and same dog rescued and abandoned in the same backyard. What's more, to keep its tension, a dimension must seem unresolvable. An atheist who argues that nothing is permanent but subconsciously yearns for the eternal, a neuroscientist who chooses of her own free will to believe that free will is an illusion, a Vegas odds maker who secretly delights in unpredictable outcomes. The defining dimension. A protagonist may house many more than three dimensions. While first circle supporting roles generally feature only one or two, But no matter how many dimensions elaborate a role, they do not have equal weight and focus. One tends to stand in the foreground, defining a character's essential spirit, while others complete the portrait. Of the 9 dimensions I ascribe to Graham Greene, which one is so crucial to his identity that if it were removed, he would vanish with it? I would suggest artist hack. The other 8 dimensions could inhabit anyone else, but the creative battle Greene waged within himself was his alone. It defined him. To repeat for clarity, a dimension is a consistent contradiction within or between the planes of a character's nature. In a complex, multidimensional character, one of these steps forward to define her unique identity. Case study: Odysseus. In a recent survey of the 100 stories that shaped the world, international experts ranked the Odyssey, Homer's 3,000-year-old epic, number 1, with his Iliad close behind. As Homer's human characters strive against vindictive, hypersexed gods and demonic, nightmarish monsters, many scenes in both stories seem like fever dreams, and yet, for all their lust and gore, the Iliad and Odyssey are the foundational stories of European culture, and their pivotal character, Odysseus, King of Ithaca, is history's first multidimensional character. The battered hero of these tales spends 10 years at war against the city of Troy in the Iliad, then another decade struggling to sail home in the Odyssey. Odysseus duels enemy warriors, wrathful gods, covetous goddesses, and bloodthirsty beasts, ultimately prevailing through grit, luck, and ingenious improvisations. The Iliad gives Odysseus his first 2 dimensions, pragmatic, idealistic, and obedient, defiant. But after the Odyssey's opening line introduces him as, quote, a complicated man, unquote, he gains 6 more: truthful, deceitful, brilliant, blundering, protecting, jeopardizing, honorable, thieving, cool, raging, and faithful, unfaithful. Pragmatic, idealistic. Odysseus is a battlefield pragmatist. To him, idealistic codes of honor end when war begins. In ancient heroic tradition, for example, poison was an ignoble, deceitful weapon no true champion would use. Even so, Odysseus coats his arrowheads with arsenic. When a captured Trojan spy begs Odysseus for mercy, he manipulates the man into thinking he'll spare his life in exchange for a military secret. But the moment the spy reveals what he knows, he's beheaded. Then, using the spy's information, Odysseus and his comrade slaughter an enemy force in their sleep. In the 10th year of the war, the Trojans back the Greek army against the sea. Facing massacre, the Greek foot soldiers rise up against their incompetent leaders. In the face of mutiny and certain defeat, a pragmatist might hoist sail for home, but Odysseus stays true to the ideals of victory. Using his powerfully persuasive voice, he reverses the revolt with a fiery prophecy that turns mutineers into warriors and sends them roaring back into the teeth of battle. Obedient, defiant. Odysseus dutifully obeys his commanding general, King Agamemnon. But when he feels that the king's tactics are ruinous, he defies his leader, telling him, "Your words are wind and have no meaning." Truthful, deceitful. As an advisor to Agamemnon's war council, Odysseus always speaks with truthfulness, insight, and wisdom. No comrade ever doubts his word, but once he sets sail for home, he lies from one end of the Mediterranean to the other. Again and again, his gift for storytelling charms his way out of trouble. He tricks people by disguising himself as an old man, or a beggar, or an immigrant from Crete, an island famous for its liars. Odysseus even tries to con his sacred protectress, the goddess Athena, but she sees through him and scolds him with, "You perverse man, how you love your artful, deceitful words." Brilliant, blundering. When the war with Troy seems all but lost, Odysseus wins victory for the Greeks by improvising history's most brilliant military tactic, the wooden horse. On the voyage home, however, Odysseus, greedy for loot, sneaks into the cave of Polythemus, the cannibalistic Cyclops. The giant traps Odysseus inside and devours half of his crew. That night, Odysseus lulls Polythemus into a drunken stupor, then drives a stake into his one and only eye. Once safely back on ship, however, Odysseus unleashes yet another arrogant impulse. He taunts the now blind Polythemus, enraging not only the giant, but the giant's father, Poseidon, lord of the seas. The furious sea god batters Odysseus's ship with massive storms and blows him wildly off course. Protecting, jeopardizing. Odysseus protected his warriors throughout the Trojan War, making certain they were well-fed and well-doctored. But while sailing home, his men discover a tribe addicted to the lotus plant, a narcotic that erases painful memories. These war-damaged, PTSD-suffering veterans, longing to forget, rush to devour the drug. To save his men from themselves, Odysseus drags them back to the ships. Later, however, as Odysseus's fleet sails toward a foreign shore, he again senses danger, but this time he jeopardizes his men's lives by anchoring their ships in the open while concealing his behind rocks. Suddenly, gargantuan cannibals attack and capsize the ships, spearing and eating his men as if they were fish. Only Odysseus and his crew escape. Honorable, thieving. Throughout the war, Odysseus fought courageously, dividing spoils honorably and treating his fellow warriors with respect. But on the voyage home, he turns pirate, plundering peaceful towns, killing their defenders, taking their women as slaves. cool, raging. In war and at sea, in the face of armies and monsters, Odysseus always keeps his cool, solving problems with calm, clear, balanced decisions. Meanwhile, back in Ithaca, a group of boisterous young men, known as the suitors, invade his palace and revel in his wealth. For 10 years, each of them tries repeatedly to seduce Odysseus's wife, Penelope. Once home, Odysseus, roiled with Achilles-like rage, takes revenge. He slaughters all 108 suitors, then all the servants who serve the suitors, and the female slaves who slept with them. Faithful, unfaithful. Away from home, Odysseus is repeatedly adulterous, bedding nymphs such as Circe. But when Calypso, a goddess of divine beauty, offers Odysseus an eternity of pleasure, he stays faithful to his beloved Penelope. What makes Odysseus an enduring creation is the dark side of his dimensions. Any cliched hero can act out positive charges, such as bravery, intelligence, and calm under pressure. But it's his impulsive, hard-hearted, raging, thieving, self-serving, and deceitful traits that expand Odysseus's character, giving him a multidimensional nature, the power of unpredictability, and a depth of character that makes his surprising choices satisfyingly credible. Of his 8 dynamic contradictions, the one that serves as his defining dimension is his dazzling brilliance versus his erratic impulses. Odysseus, after all, devised the Trojan horse ploy that ended a decade of war, but then he blundered his way into Polythemus's cave. His impulsive adventures risk his life repeatedly, but his hypnotic storytelling saves it just as often. He's both brilliant and foolish. There's no one quite like him in the 3,000 years of fiction that followed Homer. Odysseus remains perpetually modern, conflicted yet willful, death-damaged yet life-embracing. He set the stage for psychologically and morally complex characters of future generations. Anonymous's Beowulf, Shakespeare's Macbeth, Stendhal's Julian Sorel, F. Scott Fitzgerald's Jay Gatsby, Raymond Chandler's Philip Marlowe, Vladimir Nabokov's Humbert Humbert, Mario Puzo's Michael Corleone, Philip Roth's Alexander Portnoy, Hilary Mantel's Thomas Cromwell. Case study: Tony Soprano. How dimensional can a character become? Consider David Chase's creation, the New Jersey Mafia Don, Tony Soprano. The Sopranos ran for 86 episodes, and Tony was the only character to appear in every episode. To portray a man's life enmeshed in a huge number of interconnected relationships, dramatized over 86 hours, with dozens of backstory events waiting for revelation, reaching back decades to Tony's infancy, all this time and content called for one of the most complex characters ever conceived for any storytelling medium. Number one, guilt-ridden sociopath. A sociopath is someone without a conscience, an antisocial, self-centered personality who's incapable of feeling shame or remorse. At times, Tony is clearly a sociopath. Except, at other times, Tony is as guilt-ridden as Macbeth. His remorseful heart pursues him relentlessly, nagging and tormenting him into panic attacks. This Macbeth-like core contradiction of outer cruelty versus inner conscience makes Tony Soprano one of the most fascinating characters ever written for page, stage, or screen. When it's time to kill, Tony acts without hesitation. Nothing can restrain his raging impulses. Over the years, he commits 8 murders on screen, and who can count how many hits he orders or commits off screen? He is a sociopath, no doubt, but a genuinely sociopathic personality would never join any collective organization, even the mafia. Professional assassins like Javier Bardem's Anton Chigrul and Woody Harrelson's Carson Wells from No Country for Old Men would happily fill contracts to kill for the mafia, but rarely join it. The mafia is an illegal society within our legal society, but it demands all the qualities of good citizenship conventional society demands: loyalty, honesty, hard work, a stable family life, sobriety, obedience to the tribe's laws, respectful manners and etiquette, and, most important, submission to the authorities who stand above you in the hierarchy of power. If you belong to this society, breaking its commandments inflicts the pain of guilt as you accuse and belittle yourself with that nagging voice of self-disgust known as a conscience. If you have a conscience, that is. And Tony certainly does. His conscience works overtime to fill his dreams with horrifying images and drive him to a psychiatrist for help. This profound dimension of sociopathic callousness, contradicted by guilty self-punishment, is the axle of Tony's inner nature, and all his other many dimensions extend like spokes off that hub. Number two, proud, shamed. He's proud of his son's loving gentleness, yet shamed by the boy's weak-willed, suicidal nature. Number three, calculating, intuitive. For months, Tony plays Sherlock Holmes as he gathers evidence in his search for the informant who's ratting him out to the FBI. Then, in a dream, while suffering food poisoning, a fish comes to Tony, speaking in the voice of his longtime friend and family strong arm, Sal Big Pussy Bonpensiero. The fish tells him that his suspicions about Big Pussy are correct. Big Pussy is the FBI rat. So, based on a dream, Tony murders his friend. Number four, depressed, optimistic. Despair versus hope, war within him. Number five, loyal, treacherous. He's devoted to his wife, yet betrays her with his many mistresses. Six, calm, panicked. He's logical and emotional. He's cool under pressure, but a victim of panic attacks. 7. Fearless, terrified. When threatened by gangsters, he's fearless, but the chance of a terrorist attack terrifies him. 8. Sneering, envying. Tony sneers at the lives of normal people, yet he envies the lives of normal people. 9. Kills, saves. He hates human beings and kills them, but he loves animals and protects them. 10. Loves women, fears women. Tony is a macho sex addict, yet he's tortured by nightmares of castration. 11. Loves family, hates family. He hates his mother, loves his mother. He hates Uncle Junior, loves Uncle Junior. And above all, he loves himself, hates himself. Number 12. Loves life, loves death. He enjoys life's beauty, but finds death more and more intoxicating with each murder he commits. Tony is far more dimensional than Hamlet. Shakespeare surrounded Hamlet with a cast of just 10 over only 4 hours of dramatization. David Chase set Tony in a cast of many dozens through 86 hours of choices, actions, and reactions socially, personally, privately, consciously, and subconsciously. Tony is a modern model of character complexity because his dimensions crisscross at all levels of his being. Yet, try as he may, unlike Hamlet, Tony cannot change. The series' narrative drive raises the major dramatic question, will Tony change into a morally better person? Answer, no. The Tonys of this world cannot and do not change their core selves.